It's a very good afternoon. It is Niall Boylan with you for the next hour or so. And it's going to be quite contentious today because, of course, we're talking about these riots, not just across the UK and Ireland, but many other countries across Europe as well, and the United States too, when you look at what's happening on the border of Mexico. But there's a question we want to ask you is, and the question today is, why do you believe world leaders, including our own leaders and Minister for Justice, Minister for Integration, and our own Taoiseach, seem to be ignoring the people? Now, according to Grip Media, a new Red Sea poll has found that 72% of Irish people believe there should be very strict limits on the number of immigrants coming into Ireland. That figure hasn't really changed over the last 2 years, by the way. It was kind of 75, 76, 72. It's dropped a tiny little bit, maybe after the election, I don't know. While more than a fifth of voters believe politicians support increased immigration to bring in obedient voters who will support them in future elections. So in other words, what they're essentially saying is, a fifth of the voters, that, you know, politicians are not really listening to us anymore. They don't care. They're going to go and do it anyway because they support the whole idea. In other words, people believe the politicians are lefties. In addition, only a third of those polled agreed the politicians were trustworthy. So two-thirds believe they're not trustworthy, while 51% said that special interest lobbyists, NGOs, have too much influence over Irish politicians. What was also kind of quite astonishing in this poll as well, almost a third of voters believe in the number in a number of different conspiracy theories, such as the Grace replacement theory and secret medical trials on citizens. And that was according to a new survey. This is a Red Sea survey. Also, what I found interesting is when asked if they agreed with the statement that my community would suffer if it were to house international protection applicants, a significant difference was observed in voters according to social and economic class, with just 38% of the more well-off voters agreeing, while 47%, what a big difference, of others believing the statement to be true. Overall, 45% agreed with the statement, while 28%, only 28%, disagreed, and 20% neither agreed nor disagreed. So it's quite clear that those who live in the leafy suburbs care less about the whole situation, where it seems to affect working class communities more. Over a fifth of voters, 22%, told the survey they believe the establishment is replacing white people with non-white immigrants, and that the elected officials want more immigration to bring in obedient voters. That's the stats. I know that's a lot of numbers for you here, but to talk a bit more about those numbers and to find out why it is we believe politicians are not really listening to the people anymore, I decided I'd speak to the person who wrote or who put that article in, John McGurk from Grip Media, and he joins me. Don't forget, by the way, you can get involved in this if you want to text or WhatsApp at any stage at 085 122 55. John, good afternoon to you.
Good morning, Niall, or good afternoon, rather. I wasn't the one who wrote that article. I'm the publisher of it, but I'll write more about it myself, I think, tomorrow, because the figures are fascinating, aren't they?
They are. And what I find most fascinating, by the way, is the classism in it. So, you know, people obviously who are more well off kind of care less about the whole situation and probably not affected by it because when they're not seeing them being moved into their areas, I suppose, more than anything else. So that's it. But I want to just get to the nub of the problem here. We've watched what happened, of course, the tragedy that happened the other day in Southport. We've watched the riots in Southend. We've watched the riots in Leeds. Last night was more riots in London. People running around brandishing knives and all sorts of things. We've seen the protests here in Coolock. We've seen the protests all across Wicklow. We've seen protests in Dundrum, of course, in Tipperary. And that will continue to go on. And yet, Grip Media have tried their best to interview Roderick O'Gorman and many other leaders in this country as well. And they seem oblivious to what's going on. I don't know whether they're oblivious, whether they seem they're in some sort of little bubble, but they just don't seem to want to communicate. Roderick O'Gorman said they are communicating. They send a team out. They talk to the local communities, but they're not really communicating. What they're saying is, this is what we're doing. We're telling you exactly what we're doing. And if you don't like it, tough. I mean, so why are they not listening?
It's a fascinating question. To which there are a whole myriad of possible answers. But I think the one that strikes me is that there, you know, Finn McRedmond has an article in the Irish Times this morning in which he says that events like Southport, they don't create these fault lines in society. They expose the ones that are already there. And that what you're seeing breaking out onto the streets in Britain really is the eruption of something that's been developing over a number of years / decades, which is this slow erosion of a connection between the politicians on the one hand and a large section of the population on the other. Now, in Britain, of course, they have an electoral remedy for that, which is to vote for the Reform Party led by Nigel Farage. And they did very well in terms of votes, though not seats, at the most recent election. But, you know, if you look at the vote they got, that's what, 17-18% of the electorate. So I can't remember the precise percentage, but a substantial chunk of the electorate actually voted for them. The result was they have almost no representation in Parliament and they're entirely locked out of power. Now, I think if you look at that, at a similar situation here in Ireland, Niall, I mean, if you add up the vote that you got in Dublin with the vote some of the people maybe to your right got in that election, you get a similar percentage, close to a fifth of the electorate who voted for candidates. And yet there's no representation of those views in the European Parliament, very, very little representation of them in the Oireachtas. And people who vote that way and express those views are entirely locked out of power. Now, we are told we have a system that is democratic, that represents the views of the population, that gives you a voice in how your country is governed. But for whatever reason, across a large swathe of the West, and particularly in both Britain and Ireland, there's a chunk of the population that aren't represented at all in the political sphere at all, except if you take maybe a couple of lone voices like Matty McGrath or Carol Nolan, who are independents without much sway at all. So you've got a huge chunk of the electorate for whom politics increasingly holds a decreasing relevance. And therefore, they're asking, well, what's the point of voting? Do these politicians really represent me? No matter if I vote, it doesn't make a difference. And therefore, are there other answers? And for some of those people, though by no means all, the answer is to express their rage in a different way.
We did see the protests here in Ireland recently, in Coolock. And look, protests are always going to have a percentage of people who wear head cases who are there just to cause trouble. And we're all well aware of that. But the vast majority of people who are protesting are not like that. We saw the protest the weekend in London, the one organised by Tommy Robinson. It was probably 100,000 people, maybe. I don't know what the exact numbers were, but it seemed like a lot of people. And I listened to some of the presenters on GB News who had been there at the protest. They went out of their own curiosity, because, of course, they're always going to be labelled bunch of right-wing protests. And they said they were just families. They were just normal British people. Yes, there was one or two people in there, chanting stuff they probably shouldn't be chanting. But in saying that, generally speaking, it was a peaceful day. It was a peaceful protest. They're normal people, yet you get labelled as right-wing. If a previous government, going back 20 years ago, or 30 years ago, the Charlie Haughey's of this world, we know they were corrupt. We know they had their hands in everybody's pocket. We know there was a nod and wink culture. But they still had a fear. And the fear was that if they didn't do the right thing by the people, they wouldn't get re-elected or they'd be chucked out of their job. That fear doesn't exist in politics anymore. Politicians have each other's backs constantly all the time. And we see that with the interviews that Ben does, some great interviews with Grip Media. They have their backs every time. They don't care if the people disagree with what they're doing because there's no repercussions to it for them.
Yeah, and the other element of this, which isn't talked about, which is the declining influence of politicians to actually address any of these problems. I mean, one of my criticisms of people maybe who are on the right and concerned about this is that the solutions they propose are often very simplistic. We deport everybody or we close the border.
Of course, it's not as simple as that.
The reality is, a lot of our politicians have handed over power to make decisions. The difference between Charlie Haughey and Simon Harris is that Charlie Haughey actually had the power to fix problems. Simon Harris doesn't. A lot of this has been conscious. So first of all, you have in Ireland, you have the European Union, which makes loads of these decisions. You and I had a conversation a couple of months ago about the EU Migration Pact and the fact that decisions over the number of people coming into this country are now essentially a European competence and nothing to do with our lot at all on foot of the passage of that. That's the first thing. And secondly, you have the constant handing off of powers within the country to unelected and unaccountable bodies like Comisión na Mban, for example, which now regulates theoretically both you and I as the media regulator. But
they're trying to regulate the likes of this as well. They want to regulate the likes of this as well, which won't be happening, by the way.
So we have politicians have consciously reduced their ability to influence the very policy in the country, and some of them, and that's a problem that we have now as well. Because I often wonder if you elected a government that represents that 20% of the population who think that there is replacement migration going on, and the voters are bringing in replacement voters, like what could they actually do? Because I mean, you close the borders. There are economic consequences to that will be imposed upon you by Brussels. You start mass deporting people. There are legal consequences. You'll find yourself in front of the European.
But other countries have done it. Other countries are doing it. I mean, you look at Finland and Denmark, of course, Hungary. I mean, other countries have decided, we need to get strict because things are out of control. So, that's what Irish people. I think the majority of Irish people are not head cases. They're not, extreme right wingers. They're not racist. They're not any of those things. I think what they want is a fair immigration policy. policy, because this has been going on for 25 years now, right? You know, when we look at, you know, migration into Ireland. But in real terms, people didn't mind. They didn't mind asylum seekers coming in. Okay, we had a problem with direct provision. It wasn't a perfect solution. It needed to be handled better. But in saying that, you know, there was a steady stream of maybe 4,000 or 5,000 people coming in every year, and people could deal with that. That was fine. But now we have a situation where those numbers have gone up tenfold, and we cannot financially handle that situation.
Yeah, I mean, look, what we're really debating an unanswerable question there, which is why are politicians doing this? I mean, unless we were the ability to read their minds, we're not going to know. And all I can do is look at factors that might be influencing it. One of those factors is the increasing polarization of politics and the professionalization of it. To the extent that you now have a class, and if you look at that opinion poll where it shows the gap on, as you mentioned, class and wealth and better off. Well, most politicians come from that better off class. That is just a fact of life. If you're a successful politician, by virtue of your income alone, you're in the better off class. And by and large, to get to that position, you'll generally have had some advantages in life that will have propelled you into that better off class. You'll probably own your own house. You'll probably live in a decent community. You probably won't be as personally affected by the issue that you're seeing. And often the people that you're representing or the people who are the most reliable voters. I mean, if you look at elections, for example, and you look at the differential turnout between Stillorgan, where Fine Gael won 51% of the vote, and Darndale, where they barely got any votes, people in Stillorgan turn out more and vote in greater numbers. So there's an incentive to listen to that community. And then there's the classic old class warfare, which has mutated in the age of the internet into this concept of high status and low status opinions. So a high status opinion are the opinions you find in academia, which is by and large driving a lot of this. So it's the kind of like, oh, we shouldn't send criminals to jail. We should rehabilitate them. Prison just punishes people and takes away their opportunities. So we should let more people out. And that is the policy that we have. The low status opinion is hang them and flog them.
But you also
argue that the low status opinion is correct.
But you also mentioned sorry for interrupting you. You also mentioned there that, you know, there's an economic benefit to having people coming into the country and replacing the population to some degree, which 30% of people believe is happening, and because we have a low birth rate of 1.5 children. And going on to the future, that's unsustainable, and I get that. And we need to encourage skilled workers to come to Ireland to be involved in our hospitality, health service, all those kind of things, because I'm not going to conflate the two like the politicians do. But in saying that, we have seen the evidence from other countries where they've had mass migration from the continent of Africa, for example, and they become social welfare dependent. Over 47%, I think, was the figure, for example, in Sweden, are social welfare dependent. That's not good, because the majority or a large amount of people who are coming into the country as international protection applicants are unskilled workers, and they will end up on jobs that they'll never be able to afford a home, and they will be depending on the state to fund them for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, and what's more, there'll be resentment. And I think it is notable that the perpetrator in Southport, and we know very little about his motives. We know his background, which is that he's a second generation immigrant. So his parents came here. And I think it's notable if you look across the continent and you look at particularly Islamic radicalization in France and Belgium and Germany to a lesser extent, this generally always happens in the second generation. So it is in Paris, for example, most of the people who perpetrated the Bataclan attacks.
They were Algerian, weren't they? Yeah, second generation.
We're second generation migrants. And I think that is not a coincidence, because, I mean, in the West, in Ireland, we are remaking the mistakes we make. So the government's great moral crusade of the moment is to take a bunch of people from Africa and stick them in a disused factory in Coolock. And they regard that as compassion. That is the good thing to do. That is the side the goodies are on, is loading people and putting them into a factory. Now, I suspect that the descendants of those people, if the government is successful in that policy, might not regard the fact that their ancestors were shunted into a factory in Coolock as evidence of the Irish state's love for them. And I think that's what's happened in Belgium and France. You've got these people who've come in, were taken in because, oh, we have to take everybody, it's the compassionate thing to do. And then the government treated them like, you know, like a problem to be dealt with. And their children grew up not feeling French or Belgian or Irish at all, but feeling like discarded refuse in that society
and hate the West.
Against it.
And
so
hate
you
the
create
West.
And embed social problems over time.
I mean, it does come back to that old age-old question as to whether multiculturalism works. And, you know, there's very little evidence around the world where it does work. Don't get me wrong, you can deal with it, but it does little evidence that it actually works. So when you have a lot of people, and I'm not saying all of the people who come to Ireland, you know, or all of the people who come here as International Protection applicants, but many of them who come here hating our culture, hating the West for everything it stands for. I mean, as you rightly said, when you get to second generation, that's going to be a problem because it's great resentment.
Yeah, well, multiculturalism is ultimately an American idea, isn't it? It's an American idea because they're the one society who would argue that they've made it work, where you go to the west coast of the United States and you see a large number of Asian people who are descendants from Japanese immigrants and so on. And then, you know, you've got African Americans, you've got white Americans.
But that evolved over time, John. You know what I mean?
I'm not defending that. I'm not defending it because I think it's an American idea that has been exported to the rest of the world where it doesn't work in the rest of the world. First of all, it doesn't always work in America because, as we can see, it didn't work out particularly well for the Native Americans who were there first. Secondly, it's a unique situation because everybody coming into that country is ultimately of migrant heritage. If you're white, you're of migrant heritage in the US. If you're Japanese, you're of migrant heritage. So there's no question of people being displaced other than the Native Americans. And because of that, there's less potential for that kind of sense of cultural anxiety than there is in a country like Ireland or Sweden, which have been Irish or Swedish for generations culturally and ethnically and all the rest of it. So you're taking in people into a society where they have never been, and the casting the Native population, or at least some of them feel this way, in the role of Native Americans. Now, I don't necessarily think that line of argument is as strong as some of the people who believe it is, but it's something that's very deeply felt by people.
I mean, they refer to it. And somebody said
we had 800 years of you know, perceived oppression, so there's a real echo there of it. But politicians, I think, are so entranced by this idea of American liberalism and American multiculturalism and being more like California with all the cool stuff they see on their television screens that they've completely forgotten that doesn't necessarily work in Europe. Or indeed in Japan or China or anywhere else.
I mean, with a third of the voters believing in some level of what they call conspiracy theories, I don't use the word conspiracy theory because there are different theories. And some of them, by the way, are factually correct if you look at a long-term plan, particularly the CSO release figures. Was it last week, the week before? I think it was covered and gripped in relation to what the population would be like by 2057. I mean, it's quite clear that if we continue down this scenario, based on this particular scenario at the moment of 27,000 people coming in, how many children will they have, et cetera, et cetera, and you work it out mathematically, and you don't have to be a genius to work it out, that eventually, at some point, Indigenous Irish people will be a minority in their own country. But so that's not a theory, that's a fact based on the current scenario. So in relation to that, I spoke to somebody yesterday about this, and his argument with me, well, he was a lefty, and his argument was, why do you have a right to protect Ireland's identity and to protect Ireland's culture and Ireland's tradition? Well, so do we have a right to protect it? Because he was saying, so what? That's the way the world is moving. It's progressive, it's changing. You know what I mean? We have to just accept it. That's the way the world has always been.
I think the simplest way to answer that is that we have a duty to examine the consequences of it. Because I think his answer would be very different were the reverse happening. Were it, for example, the culture of the unknown tribes in the Amazon rainforest were being exterminated. For example, I'll give you a good example. There's an island off India. Do you remember the island off India where 7 or 8 years ago an American missionary went to and he got killed by the natives on the beach? Do you remember that?
Yeah. Yep.
And the argument is that you can't go to that island because their culture is worth preserving, even though that culture doesn't have electricity, doesn't have any of the amenities of modern life.
It was also to do with diseases as well, wasn't it? They've never had viruses or diseases. Yeah.
Exactly. If you look at, for example, what the left says about the travelling community in Ireland, where we have to recognise their distinct ethnicity, we have to protect their cultural heritage, all of those things. And you said to him, well, would it matter if the traveller heritage was wiped off the face of the planet in the morning? His answer might be different. Now, I'm not saying Irish heritage is going to be wiped off the face of the planet or anything like that, but you answer that question by going back and looking at what the left's policy is in other areas. But even then, you have to take the theory of it all, because that's a theoretical argument. You take the theory of it all out, and you look at the practical consequences of what's happening, you look at it in practical terms, and you say these are the early echoes of what we're seeing in Southport and in London and in the Dublin riots of last year. Is this going to get better? Are people suddenly one day going to wake up and listen to your left-wing friend saying, oh, well, it doesn't really matter, and go, oh, he was right all along? No, they're not. You have to deal with people as you find them. That's the first thing. And the second thing is in relation to this. There's the reason that we're having replacement immigration, and I put it in scare quotes because there are because it's both a real thing and a fantasy. I think it is a fantasy that this is a deliberate policy to racially erase the Irish. I don't think that's the case. But I do think it is a deliberate policy to demographically replace the Irish, because we're having declining birth rates. And so politicians are congratulating themselves and patting themselves on the back for finding a solution that will avert a pension crisis, as they...
I was going to say that, yeah. But would the better solution for politicians not to encourage people to have more children?
They do say that, and that is part of Project 2040. But a lot of people might wonder, well, why aren't you addressing the problems that make that policy necessary? Why aren't you doing more to support Irish families who might ideally wish to have more children but don't feel that...
And afford a house for those children. Yeah. I mean, and that's what we should be doing. We should be making... I mean, the reason we're only having 1.5 children is because two people have to work now to afford a mortgage. And even at that, they can't afford a mortgage, probably in Dublin City or anywhere else. I seen one house advertised yesterday for rent around Griffith Avenue for 8,000, a three-bedroom semi-detached, 8,000 per month. Somebody's taking the piss along the line here. So in other words, we have to address those problems before we can address the 1.5 children. Because I believe young couples would like to have two or three children if they could actually afford it and manage to do it some way. But they can't do it in a one-bedroom apartment. And that's the problem we have there. All the problems that we're having.
The other point here, Niall, is that you can't do both at the same time. Mm. So you can't fix the housing crisis and constantly increase the population at the same time, because you'll be like a man trying to bail water out of a boat with the hole in it.
But go ahead.
So I mean, you can't do both. So you can't fix the housing crisis and constantly increase immigration. That's basic mathematics that our politicians seem unable to get their heads around. And they genuinely believe, because they've got useful idiot economists who will tell them performatively in the pages of the Irish Times, immigration and housing are not connected. That is nonsense. They are clearly and
absolutely connected.
Evidently connected. So you know, you have this kind of dual imperative where they're trying to solve a housing crisis and an immigration crisis when one is making the other worse. It's such muddled thinking. But I think they're kind of caught in a position where culturally and socially, they don't feel like they can now... I mean, it's like backing a person up against a wall. They don't feel that they can admit that they were wrong. And so they're going to damned if they're not going to try and make this work come hell or high water. And so we're all caught in this trap.
Yeah, but they won't even enforce the current legislation that we have. They don't even enforce the laws we have.
Exactly. But the other thing is, we lack politicians who are able to hold them to account, because it comes back to what I said at the start of this conversation. You know, you've 20% of the electorate who are casting votes, and because of either the present company excluded, the quality of the candidates, or the quality of the platforms, or the number of candidates running for various parties, there is no electoral representation in the Oireachtas that can hold them to account. And oftentimes the candidates that are running, or the solutions being proposed on the other side are so radical and so extreme that they're turning off a critical mass of the middle ground voters. So you're not getting people holding them to account in a coherent and logical way. Michael McNamara was doing it when he was in the Dáil. He's now gone, but he was only one voice. You know, Matthew McGrath is only one voice. So it comes back to...
Michael McDougall was doing it as well, but I think he's turned.
Exposing the intellectual emptiness of this agenda.
Michael McDougall was doing it as well, but I think he's turned turtle now, to be honest with you, because I think he's looking for votes for the presidential election. Just my guess, because I know he had a go at Donald Trump this morning. You're also going to have a go at Donald Trump today in Grip Media.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I wait to read it first, John, before I pass any comment whatsoever on it, because I do like your articles. I like reading them objectively sometimes, by the way. And I will invite you back on again, by the way, to talk about that article. And if you didn't mind, I would love to get Michael Walsh on, the author as well, an American political commentator. I'd love to get him on to have a chat with you, maybe, if you didn't mind.
Yeah, certainly.
Listen, John, it's been very interesting.
We won't talk about Trump now, but yeah, I think there is room for debate on that topic, put it that way.
John, listen, I'm looking forward to reading that article as well, and many other great articles in Grip Media. Listen, thank you very much indeed for coming on. John McGurk, Senior Editor with Grip Media. Thank you. Now, thanks. I want to put it out to you now, the calls. Please text or WhatsApp us and let us know why you believe politicians are ignoring us. John has kind of summed it up very well there, that we're in a situation, unfortunately, where we don't have representation. So we have representation on the left. The socialists have all the representation they want and all the ears in government that they want. But the right, or the right-leaning people, or the conservatives, don't have any representation. So let me know what you think. The number, as usual, is 085 122 55. Let me go to Jackie first, if I can. Jackie, hi, how are you?
Great. Now, and look, what would we do without the Grip and yourselves? Jeez, we wouldn't be getting any information any factual information. So fair play to John and gang. It really is confusing because on one hand you have been trying to reduce the population because of climate change, and then you have this thing, oh, now look at, we need to increase the population.
Well, I don't think it's about increase. I mean, you're talking about the overall world population. They talk about we need to decrease that because of climate change, allegedly. I don't buy that argument anyway. But what the government are doing is we're not increasing the world's population. We're just shifting it around a little bit. That's what they'll tell you. So we're moving the people, you know, who are from those places, you know, and the continent of Africa mainly. We're moving them now to Europe.
Yeah, but again, as John was saying, it's gone to the stage that do we actually have control anymore? Does our government, who we elected, have actually any control? Is it the EU that is pulling the strings?
Yeah, but when we signed up to the EU, we didn't sign up to lose all of our sovereignty.
No.
You know, there is exceptions in there, particularly in relation to migration, where we do have a level of control. Now, the EU Migration Pact, unfortunately, did a bit of damage to that. Mm. But here's the thing. What's in the EU Migration Pact, actually, is not the worst thing in the world, if we actually implemented it. But that will never happen.
Yeah.
And we could have been. And the point is, we didn't have to sign up to that. We could have done that without the EU. You know what I mean? We could have easily been deporting people, had reception centres and ports, and processed people quickly. And we still can't do it, by the way. We're not going to do it. This is going to continue. And the government have more or less said that. Rodrigo Gorman has more or less said it. He might as well have just went on the news and said, listen, you can talk all you want. We're not listening to you. And for the continued future, we're going to keep allowing 27 to 30,000 people wander into the country every year, and we don't even care who they are. Because that's exactly what they're doing.
Exactly. And what we'll do is we'll engage with the rural communities and we'll sit down and talk to them. But it doesn't matter. You're still going to get them anyway in the story. So it's a dictatorship.
But here's the thing. This is the thing that confuses me. They're intelligent people. Well, I assume they are. Simon Harris, Roger Gorman, you know, Micheál Martin, Alan McAtee. They're intelligent human beings. So surely they can see this is causing a problem in our country with civil unrest in the UK, serious civil unrest at the moment. Keir Starmer, obviously in control, doesn't seem to care. And so as a leader of a country or a minister, surely you would want the most peaceful 5 years. You would want a 5 years where you've done a good job, the citizens are reasonably happy, they'll never be always perfectly happy, but they're reasonably happy and they'll vote for us again. Surely isn't that the job of a politician?
It is. Unless that we're missing something here that we're not being told something that they know that we don't know.
I don't know whether there's a bigger plan, Jackie. That seems...
I don't think
they're that intelligent, to be honest with you, that they have a bigger plan. Yeah. I just think they're going with the flow. And it just seems, like as John mentioned, they're looking at California and they see this as some sort of idealistic place to live. I mean, which it's certainly not. Look at San Francisco, it's a mess. I mean, realistically, I don't... People talk about, you know, the Great Replacement Theory and they talk about the Great Reset and they talk about the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab and all this kind of stuff. But I don't believe Irish politicians are that intelligent, that they're involved in some sort of cabal or some sort of agreement or some sort of underhanded... I think they're obviously Mayfainers and they're selfish and looking after themselves for a big job in Europe at the end of all this. But I don't think they're that clever.
Well, the jury's out in a sense because, as I say, maybe there is some part of that, the jigsaw here, that we're missing and that we're not told. Because it actually doesn't, because there are good people up there, and you know that, and I know that, and they're all singing off the same hymn sheet, like here with the opposition and all. They're all saying the same thing. They're putting it different, but they're saying the same thing.
I mean, look, I understand politicians are concerned about the future and there's no money for the pensions because the Irish population are getting older, we're not having enough kids. But the answer to that is firstly, encourage us to have more children by making life more affordable and housing more affordable and jobs better paid, etc., etc. The second way of doing that is reaching out to the world, to all the wonderful, skilled people around the world. We welcome you. And, you know, we can do that through the proper visa system. If you've got a skill, you can add to our economy. You know, you can come over here, you must have a job. But what we're doing is importing people who are going to be a burden on the state for the rest of their lives, most likely.
Yeah, and we seem to, you know, where there are countries here that have done this. Holland has done it. Other countries have done this going back over the last 30 years. And there is a history there and there's knowledge there. But yet they don't seem to go and say, OK, let's go and have a look at other countries and see then how this kind of a policy works. And they just jump in. And it's the same with the HSE. It's the same with so many things in Ireland. We make huge mistakes. And yet it's out there. It's been done before. None of this is new. It has been done before. And it's ongoing over whatever, 30 years or 40 years. But yet there's nothing. There's no lessons learned.
But I mentioned it, John. You go back to Bertie and Charlie and all the rest of them, right? But particularly the likes of Charlie High. Corrupt as hell, right? Taking backhanders, brown envelopes in their pockets, all sorts of stuff, right? But the one difference was they had a fear of being caught. So, because they knew if they were caught, they wouldn't get re-elected and they'd most likely get chucked out, right? There'd be a vote of no confidence and they'd be chucked out, they'd be fired, right? Our own politicians have no fear. Because no matter what decision they make and how bad that decision might be and the ramifications of that decision or the fact that they look clueless sometimes, you know, when we looked at the Minister for Social Protection the other day, Heather Humphreys, had no clue about her own figures, right? It ended up on BBC News or something like that in relation to the amount of people that are being overpaid who come into this country. When they have no clue in their own departments, Hannah McEntee in the middle of the Oireachtas has no clue how many people are being deported. They've no idea what they're actually doing and yet they still remain in jobs. I've just mind-blowing.
It is, and people still go out and vote for the same thing over and over. So who's at fault? Is it that we are all at fault here? Well, I know I wouldn't be voting that direction, but like it's still, when you look at the local elections and then the European elections, I was shocked. I couldn't believe it.
No, neither could I. Still, stay there for a second. Speaking of voting, by the way, let me go to Suzanne, because Suzanne and Madeline, her friend, have started a new campaign now to get people, I suppose, in more working class areas that have a lower turnout for voting, to get them registered and get them voting. Suzanne, hi, how are you?
Hi, Noel, good morning, and thanks for having me on the show. No, I'm listening to everything and I've taken notes here, but just some things before I want to say that. You know, Noel, that we were on your campaign, and the shocking thing is, like, I'm not going to add stuff that you've already said, but 50% of people didn't vote in the local and European elections. That statistic is shocking to me. It's shocking because, as you said, people feel there's no point in voting because the same crowd will get in. I think the government know that 50% of the vote will go to them because they get the Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael vote. And as for the spoiled votes, when I did adjudication over at the RDS, the thousands of spoiled votes where people just genuinely didn't know.
I saw the pile on the table. I saw massive piles on the table. There was four or five tables, Suzanne, with people adjudicating around them, of piles of spoiled votes. And that's people who didn't put, you know, they put X's instead of 1, 2, 3 or whatever it was, or they put number one beside each person. You know, we need more information, education around voting, and we need to get people registered.
And that's what myself and Madeline are doing. We're not politicians. We're not aligned to any party or people or anything. We took that action based on the fact that 50% of people don't vote. We're starting it locally. We're going to run it out nationally. But it's just to get people to register to vote, to help them. And when they get their vote, they then have an option. If somebody pops up in their local community, they can vote. The second part of that campaign will be doing ballot training. We're going to be running Zoom calls and all kinds of stuff locally. And it's gathering moss now and people are literally jumping on board. So we were up in Coolock, says no site, on Tuesday. And the response was amazing. We were up in Northside. People are a little bit hesitant when you approach them and they're saying they think you're from the government. And the minute you say to people, we're saying we're just trying to get you to vote, because if you don't register to vote, you don't
nothing
have a
change.
Voice.
Yeah, nothing is going to change. You know, okay.
And the government is one. But now, can I just add two things? Two things I want to add. Of all the things, I'm not going to reiterate, people can't afford to have kids anymore. Even as far back as when I had kids, people can't afford to have kids. They can't afford childcare. They can't afford mortgages. They can't afford to do much in life without, you know, literally pins the wall. Mm. So, you know, that's my first point. The government, like, I don't believe they're intelligent. I just think they're arrogant. I think they're trying to, they just swan along and get away with it as long as they can. You have Roger gone this morning, some news piece this morning, telling people Dundrum and Coolock will go ahead despite the protests. That's not on, Niall. That's just not on. Ireland have the most aggressive plantation of migrants in the whole of Europe. I don't know whether you're aware of that fact. We have the most aggressive planning laws, have been, you know, swept under the carpet and have been overtaken. We have the most aggressive plantation. And I'm just going to add one thing. I saw an email from a young girl living in Dundrum that went, I'm not going to say where it went, but I saw the email, 21, suffering at the moment from huge mental health issues and anxiety at the thoughts of these men being planted in her little town. It makes me nearly cry. Apart from everything, people are living, like they talk about the riots, people are living with anxiety and mental health issues, worried about what's going to happen to the communities when these people come in. There's nothing about that printed in the media. And then they see people going loopers at protests or being antagonized. We forget about mental health and all this. I'm anxious. I don't want this to happen to our country. I want to be able to go up to my parks and walk around and feel safe. And the second thing is, Niall, it's not all working class areas. Santry is not a working class area unless you go to the park in Santry, and it's, you know, it's quite full of economic migrants walking around in the park. But the other thing, Niall, just lastly, people in this country need to wake up. People living in their leafy houses with their
cars
and their two holidays a year.
But look at the Red Sea poll, and they asked the question, right? And this was the statement. Do you agree with the statement? My community will suffer if it were to house international protection applicants. That was the statement. A significant difference was observed in voters according to the social and economic class, with only 38% in more well-off voters agreeing, while 47% of those in lower class areas disagree or agreed. So what I'm saying is, it's clearly a class thing here. So in other words, if you're happy out and living in Dalkey or living in Blackrock or living in Fairhouse or whatever it is with your fancy four-bedroom house and your leafy suburb, you don't really care too much because it doesn't affect you that much. But if you're living in Coolock or you're living in Ballyfermot or Darndale or whatever it happens to be, you're affected more by these things because these things tend to be where they put people.
I know. But now it will affect them eventually. People are going to wake up in 6-12 months and go, what the hell happened? It is going to affect everybody because the government cannot sustain the level of spending, a million a day housing economic migrants. It's eating into everybody's tax. And if people
It's a lot more than a million a day, by the way, Suzanne. A lot more. Well, it's 4 billion in 1 year. 4 billion in 1 year.
But now, can I just throw out there to everybody, if you see Madeline and I on Twitter or wherever, we're doing this to wake people up. Our aim is to get everybody to register to vote so at least they have choices when the election comes along. Okay. There's no excuse then when we see the statistics. So the message is, get out, register to vote. If you need help doing that, reach out to us. We can help you. We can walk you through it. Thanks, Niall.
No problem at all. I'm going to put a little video together with Suzanne and Madeline, and I do support both of them, by the way, in no matter who you want to vote for. I'm not telling you who you should and shouldn't vote for, obviously, but no matter who you want to vote for, you have to register to vote. Otherwise, it's pointless. Don't be shouting from the gallery and not doing anything about it. And I will be supporting Madeline and Suzanne in that mission to get people in the next election to vote. Let me go to Joe. Joe, hi, how are you?
Not too bad, Niall. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good. Joe, I mean, why do you think politicians are not listening? Not just in Ireland. You can see it in Britain as well. You know, you've got Keir Starmer ignoring riots and ignoring people. And by the way, we should ignore riots to some degree. Nobody should be rioting. But ignoring peaceful protests and ignoring the people in general. Why are they ignoring them?
Well, Niall, I think you and me, we have the same beliefs. I think there's a problem around the world nowadays. Politicians are just a bunch of snobs. They're arrogant, upper class, lefty snobs. They have this agenda that they want to bring every Tom, Dick and Harry into each country, and they're looking down their noses on the ordinary people. They don't care about the ordinary people. And while this kind of policy continues to go on, Niall, you're going to have this open door policy of illegal migration, left, right and centre. And that is the problem, Niall. They just don't care. They're arrogant. It doesn't affect them because they see this as some sort of a sort of a get-out clause like that. They just put in as many people as possible so that, you know, it's taken off the pressure off their hands, like, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, but surely they'd want to keep their jobs, because you'd imagine, you know, if I make a bad decision, I'm not going to get a job for another 5 years and get re-elected. So surely that would be part of their mission, is to keep their job. So you'd imagine you'd want to at some point start listening to people.
Well, you would, Niall, but you saw there in the recent European election and the local election, they did, the same cronies got back in. And I know now a lot of people in this country have very forgetful memories. You know, they have sort of national amnesia. And you saw the likes of the same parties getting in again. And, you know, the sad thing about it is, Niall, and I don't agree with violence, but until politicians start to wake up, not just in this country, but all over the world, you're going to have a lot of this anarchy going on left, right and centre. And it's not going to stop, because the problem is you have the likes of Keir Starmer, who's, as you know, we totally would be opposed to his policies. He was on there yesterday and he says that, you know, the full rigours of the law will apply to the people involved in the riots the other night. And look, that's okay. But, like, when you have statements like that coming out with politicians, not only are they causing anarchy, they're actually picking a fight with these people. And that
absolutely.
Is
I mean, if I was Keir Starmer, I was the Prime Minister of a country, I'd say, listen, the full rigours of the law will apply to these people who created these riots or who brandish knives or set fires or whatever it is. But in saying that, we have a problem that we must deal with as a government. And the problem is that many people are not happy with some of the decisions that have been around migration. We need to communicate more with communities, and we need to sort this problem out, and we need to protect our borders. That's what I'd be saying. But unfortunately, they're not saying that, Joe. Listen, Joe, thank you very much indeed. Just breaking news coming in, by the way. A 17-year-old boy who was charged with the murders of three girls in the knife attack at the Taylor Swift theme dance in Southport has been named as Axel Rudicabana. He appeared at a hearing at Liverpool Crown Court on Thursday, where the recorder of the Liverpool Judge Andrew McInerney KC made the ruling. The teenager could previously not be named because of his age, but would have lost his anonymity when he turns 18 next Wednesday. So the idea, by the way, that they were referring to this all week in the papers, the 17-year-old child. He's 18 on Wednesday, so the judge has now said he can be legally named, and his name, this animal's name, is Axel Rudicabana. That's his name. For those who know. So the name that was going around, there was a name going around the internet. He's got it wrong, lads. That wasn't the right name, clearly, because that's his name, unless it was some sort of pseudonym that he uses or something like that. Anyway, he has been charged in Liverpool court. He's 18 next Wednesday, 17 years of age, and he's an absolute scumbag. And I'm sure he will go down in history as such. And hopefully the full rigours of justice will go down about this guy. But it does ask a bigger question. And the bigger question is, we're not used to seeing crimes like that happening. We're not used to seeing terror like that happening. And they, by the way, they said, oh, we're not classing it as a terrorist incident. Of course it's terrorist. If somebody goes into a building with a knife to aimlessly kill random people because of a culture or because of some sort of ideology or because of some sort of extremism or radicalization, clearly it's a terror incident. It's terrorizing, isn't it? That's the definition of the word, terrorizing. Let me go to Tony. Tony, hi, how are you?
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good. Hello. I'm good, Tony. Tony, well, I'm delighted. Niall, I'm delighted to see they've named this guy now.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what difference does that make, Noel? There's three little children dead.
Yeah.
What difference does he name make? Doesn't make any difference at all. Honestly, it doesn't make any difference at all. It makes no difference what he's named there. Like it was already perpetrated last week on poor innocent children.
Well, at least he'll be charged as an adult, not a minor.
Good, yeah, but good. Like, and that's okay, but I'd like to get on. You made a comment there, just like about our government, that they aren't that intelligent for to be able to put this together.
No. What I said was they're intelligent people, but I said I don't believe they're in cahoots. I don't believe there's a...
Right.
You know what I mean? When I hear people talking about the World Economic Forum or, you know, the EU, although the EU has great control.
No, the World Economic Forum, I don't think has that much to do with it.
But what I'm saying, I don't think there's a room somewhere in the world where there's five people planning it all. You know, I don't think that's happening. I think it's naturally happening, and our own government are too stupid to see that, and they're just allowing it to happen.
Yeah, no, But our government here, our so-called government, are just following orders, I think. They're getting the orders from the EU, and they are stupid enough to follow them. Now, the only way I think that that works out, as you said, O'Gorman and people like him is not going to be elected. No, but they're probably on a massive promise of the EU. Look, you're going to be well looked after if you implement this. In your own country, you're going to be a pariah that's not going to be able to walk down the street. But we'll look after you. And that's what we're up against. I honestly, I don't think Roderick O'Gorman will be able to walk the streets of Ireland in 2 years.
Well, I know a lot of people are not happy about him. And by the way, I don't make it personal against people or, you know, or whatever. There should be no personal threats against people's safety. I completely am against that. If you disagree with a person's policy, you know, we have democracy. Well, we should have democracy where you vote them out of a job.
Yeah, but no, we haven't got democracy with Roderick O'Gorman because he's being constantly told the people don't want this, the people don't want this. And he is goading the people. His arrogance is just off the scale. That he can stand and go, I don't care what you want. I'm going to do this because this is my pet project. And I've been instructed by the EU that this has to be implemented in this country. And I'm going to do it because I'm going to be looked after. And I'm going to be out of here, so it doesn't really make any sense.
Well, I don't know he's going to be out of here. But look, in relation to what you're saying, you are correct. The new Red Sea poll found that 72% of Irish people believe there should be strict limits on the number of migrants coming into Ireland. But that doesn't seem to be happening. There is no limits. Anybody can wander in here now.
Niall, he doesn't care if it's 90%.
But hang on. But he's not the only one responsible. You know, ultimately, the person responsible is Simon Harris.
Niall, he sent out them...
No, you're missing the point. Ultimately, the person responsible is the Taoiseach of the country. He's the one who makes the...
Come on.
Well, I agree he's useless, but I'm just saying you can't pin all the blame on O'Gorman because if we believed, or if the government believed, or if Simon Harris believed O'Gorman was doing a bad job as the leader of the Green Party, which he is now, we could easily have a vote, or Sinn Féin could call for a vote of no confidence.
Hold on.
Why aren't Sinn Féin calling for a vote of no confidence in him? Why?
Right. Simon Harris, he's looking for to move house now because he feels under threat. Why? Because 10 people went and demonstrated outside his house. Come on, Niall. You know what I mean?
Well, hang on. To be fair, Tony, I don't agree, and I've said it twice already, I don't agree with threats against them. Now, there have been threats against Simon Harris. There have been threats against Roderick O'Gorman, and I don't agree with that.
The internet.
No. People outside his house. I don't agree with it, Tony. I don't agree with people outside or threatening Simon Harris's house. His wife and kids live there. I don't agree with that.
Right, okay. And the people down the country, down in Tipperary, they're getting 300 migrants into
absolutely
their area.
And that's there's despicable. Tony, I agree. And I understand that's a despicable policy and decision. But I don't agree with going up to politicians' doors. We don't need to go
right
down that route. That's
so
not a route we should go down.
He's able to live in peace if he's putting other people in terror. Like I just said, that young girl, her nerves is gone in that town.
I agree.
She's suffering with her men. Why should he have a life of peace and everyone else have a life of misery and terror?
Well then it's important that Irish people voice that. But the problem is, Tony, for some reason, we have become this very passive nation who do very little and sit in our holes and give out all day.
Yeah, but then when people are doing something, they're just like going and demonstrating. There was nothing, like, there was no one laid a hand on him. There was no one put a brick through his window. There was no one doing anything. They just stood outside his house with a banner. Now he has to move house. Probably funded again by the government.
I'm talking about when people voice their views by mass protest, peaceful protest, by the way.
And look what happened then. The Garda attacked him with pepper spray and buttons.
Okay, the Garda, now don't get me wrong, I'm not saying the Garda are not heavy-handed. They absolutely are, right? They absolutely are heavy-handed, right? But there are always, the problem is, when you have a protest, and we've seen that in Coolock and other places, there are always going to be a small amount of individuals who are there to cause trouble.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
and
okay,
you accept
that.
And, and that's unfortunate for the peaceful protesters because it turns the whole thing into a bleeding riot. Now,
right,
we have had protests in the past, Tony, in this country, mass national protests. And they've been very constructive and very successful. But we don't seem to do that anymore, Tony. So if 72% of the population think the government are getting this wrong, where are they? Why aren't they out on O'Connell Street? Why isn't there 100,000, like there was the weekend in England, why isn't there 100,000 people walking down O'Connell Street peacefully? Why?
I can't answer that because I've been to the protest, so I can't answer why. Maybe they're just lazy. Maybe, as you said, they're gone off that Palatio Point, watch Sky Sports, watch the game. Because they're not awake, Noel.
And the other thing, right? If 72% of people believe the government are letting in too many people, and I was the one during the European elections who said we needed limited numbers, we need to have a fair immigration policy, why didn't they all vote?
And that's how you got so much good support.
I did, but why didn't I get more?
Unfortunately, it wasn't enough. Again.
And I'm not being a sore loser. I'm just asking, if that's the case, why didn't I get more? You know what I mean?
Now, what happens like when democracy fails is, what brought... for peace.
Yeah.
Like, what was the one single thing that brought them to the peace?
See, here's the thing. I got 8.5% of the vote in first preference, right? It goes up to 12.5% or 13% when you go to second preference and third preference, right? Votes. So that's 8.5% of the population of Dublin thought that I had the right idea. But that 8.5%, almost 10%, is not represented in government.
No, because they don't want any any discerning voice there at all. They don't want yours, they don't want mine, they don't want any discerning voice.
Okay, listen, I have to get to a load of people. Tony, thank you very much indeed. Let me go to John. John, hi, how are you?
Well, look, it's obvious as the nose in your face at this stage, no, right, that the Irish government are at war with the civilian population. When you have Roderick O'Gorman telling people no, lump it or like it, these people are going into A, B and C, right? Where one of the saddest sights I've seen the other night, which I thought I wouldn't see since 1969 on my television screen, is the delivery of two water cannons from the RUC, of course, compliments to Mr. RUC, who's in charge of the Garda force at the moment down south, and who is not wanted by even the members of that force, right? Mr. RUC himself has now given delivery of two water cannon to be used on the streets against the democratic Irish sovereign people, right, to blow them off the fucking streets. This is what we're all... Whether you like it or not, no, the government of today are at war with the civilian population, and it's about time people got out into that thick, stupid head.
No, I understand, and I hope those water cannons are never used, by the way. But I would always say to people, if you do go out and protest, try and do it peacefully. And I know you do, John. You do it peacefully. You know, it's unfortunate.
Well, I tell you what this country is crying out for at the moment is that someone like... Some people don't like him, but he had a march in London over the beginning. There was no problem there. There was sporadic violence after, but you'll get that anyway, probably in the norm weekend. There's Tommy Robinson. We need a Tommy Robinson here. We need somebody that's the likes of me and all the other people that are sick shit of all these areas where all these people have been poisoning, right, to get us together, right, that they can get behind this person, male or female, I don't care, right.
But here's the problem is, the right in this country, those who object to illegal immigration, and oh, mind you, you're not allowed to use the word illegal immigration, you have to say irregular migration, bullshit, okay? Yeah, bullshit. Illegal immigration. Those who object to it and want a fair immigration policy, you know, that there are so many different views on that, John, that they can come together. Now, I've listened to people say, like you, or other people who have a moderate view or have a view of it and a fair view in most cases, I would say, and most of my callers have a very fair view in relation to it. But I've also seen some people online, I'm not going to start naming names, they're out-and-out racists, right? And they then ruin it for everybody because all of a sudden they put the label far right on everybody because of their views go over the top, completely over the top.
Yeah, but
they start mentioning skin colour and all sorts of things.
Well, you have, like, only for yourself and the like of groups which has been said today, right? I mean, I don't know where we'd be because, like, I mean, Joe Duffy and the rest of these people who are...
Oh, you won't hear this conversation at Joe Duffy.
Yeah, well, you end up a whooping hill.
Yeah, and by the way, RT got 725 million. We get nothing. Nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
We rely solely on the donations and the subscriptions people give us. And I wish, and I'm saying this in a little bit of an angry voice, because so many people that watch this show and listen to it or download it, altogether 750,000 people either view it live or watch it or download it every single month. And yet, they won't even put their hand in their pockets and give us a euro or whatever a month, 2 euro, anything at all. You know, it's really hard because we've got to pay bills here, you know?
As was previously brought up there as well, like, I mean, Harris says no, the cops are advised to go into family, right, because it's easier to police it, to protect, right? What does that say? That for the first time ever, the Prime Minister of this country will have to get special protection, right? What does that say about him and his government? And
it doesn't say an awful lot, and I agree. We shouldn't be in a situation where Roderick O'Gorman or indeed Simon Harris has to get special protection because the people shouldn't be that angry. But they are angry. No. And you're right when Radhika Gorman turns around and says, listen, we're doing it anyway. You know, that really rubs people up the wrong way. He's not the only one. Keir Starmer's doing the same thing in Britain as well.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to get to the bottom of why they would do something like that to the people.
For the simple reason, look, they're being controlled. They just don't care anymore. We have no government, sovereign government anymore. And I'll just finish and just give someone else a chance. This idea of people turning up outside houses, you know I've done it with Micheál Martin and the whole lot before, right? But I never had to cover my face. The day I wear a balaclava is the day I'll be labelled as a terrorist, right? But I'm convinced, nothing will convince me more than the fact that the people that turned up outside certain politicians' home wearing balaclavas were there to destroy legitimate protesters. They've put every man down the salary and that they were undercover cops.
Okay, listen, thank you very much indeed, John, for your opinions on that. Let me go to Tommy. Hi, Tommy, how are you?
How are you, Niall? You well?
I'm good, Tommy. Tommy, I'm still trying to get to the bottom of it. When I look at the Red Sea poll yesterday, 72% of Irish people believe there should be strict limits on the number of immigrants coming to the country. That number hasn't changed in the last 2 years, realistically, right? The majority of people, mind you, this is a class thing, economic class thing, believe that they feel unsafe. My community would suffer if we were to house international protection applicants in the area. So the majority of people agree with that statement. So when we see the people feel one way, but the government are motoring ahead and doing it, why? Why?
Well, we've got to look at who was representing us and who was voting. Obviously, it's middle class and upper class who benefit from migration that are voting more than working class people, because working class people have had enough and they can't be bothered. Middle class politicians, TV presenters, pop stars, sports stars, all these people that support multiculturalism aren't affected by it. They benefit from having a low wage workforce and a high economy, especially landlords, for example. A landlord can have four Polish lads paying $4,000 a month. But what about the Irish electrician with three kids that can only afford half of that? Mm-hmm. He's pushed out the suburbs. The big problem in Ireland is being Irish isn't good enough for us anymore. We want to be European. And when we joined the EU in the 70s, we gave away our sovereignty. We gave away our currency in the late 90s. And we've now, our language is dead and our culture is dying. Look at Hungary. Hungary are trying to stop migration and they're going to charge them $200 million. And there's a good chance the president could be brought to court. So for anything to change, we need working class people going into politics. Like you said, it's a bit of a class war. But we need people that are like Nigel Farage. Give him all the stick you want. But the man sticks to his guns and people...
Hold on. But we are trying to, you know, there is an attempt to get people, for example, into power. I ran for election, for example, and other people have ran for the local elections and will probably run in the general elections. Other people, not me, but other people run the general elections. So there is an attempt to get people into power who would be right-leaning or conservative, but they're not getting voted in because the working class and those people who are really affected by this, you know, that 48% of people who are affected by this, they're not voting. They're either not bothering or they're not registered. I don't know.
It takes time. Like I said, it's after taking us since the Celtic Tiger to get ourselves into this. It's going to take a long time to get out of it.
I'm reading this. Sorry, there's breaking news just coming in here now, right? Yeah, it's just literally just coming in here now, right? And I got to read this. This is really because it's relevant to what we're talking about. The High Court has ruled that the state is in breach of human rights law by failing to house over 3,000 people who've sought international protection in Ireland since last year. The court made the ruling following a case taken by the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission, another NGO, against the state last year. The case heard of 3 days in May when the commission sought a declaration by the court that the state is failing to adequately provide asylum seekers with shelter, food, access, basic hygiene facilities on top of a weekly allowance. The IHREC had argued that the state was in breach of the EU's Charter on Fundamental Rights. I mean, I could read on. But essentially what that means is, if we don't give them somewhere to live when they come here, illegally or legally, it doesn't matter, we're in breach of their rights. I mean, fuck our rights. We're in breach of their rights and they'll sue us.
Under whose law?
Because we're part of the EU.
Well, it's time to go then, or we need to stand up to the EU. We have this underdog mentality with the EU. The EU is our daddy. We're not happy. We're not strong enough to be just Ireland. We have to be part of the EU. So we need a politician like Nigel Farage to stand up to the EU. And I can't.
I mean, I don't want some sort of state where we keep it all to ourselves. I mean, I think diversity is wonderful. I love people coming here to the proper process, to the visa process, working in our hospitals, or, you know, integrating into our society. I think it's great. But I don't want to see is a continuation of what we're doing at the moment, which is a free-for-all, which puts us all in danger.
Okay, can we start turning people away? No. So we have, until we stand up to the EU, we're not going to be able to start. We're not going to come up. We just signed an immigration pact, did we not? An asylum pact just recently.
Mm.
So we need to stand up to the EU. We need a politician that's willing to stand up and put up Irish people. And like, if you want to integrate into this society, we're letting people into the country that hate our way of living. They hate Irish people.
Mm.
They hate freedom of speech. They hate gay communities. They hate anyone that has a different religion than they do. They hate consumerism. They hate democracy. And most of all, they hate freedom of speech. Until we start getting Islamic politicians and foreign TV presenters that aren't Irish, these politicians won't care until their jobs are affected.
Okay, listen, thank you for that, Sammy. I have loads of people to get to. I do apologise. Carl, hi, how are you?
Good afternoon, now. How are you?
Good, Stephen. I'll be with you in a second, and Morris too. Sorry, go ahead, Carl.
Yeah, look, I just think in regards to what's happening right now, it does seem to be some sort of directive from the EU. It's happened right across Europe, and you can see riots happen all over Europe as well. You know, crimes happen as well. I believe our politicians are corrupt. Like, they're getting bribed, they're being extorted, or they're just spineless amongst them because they're afraid of being called racist or losing their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
They're only thinking of themselves, their careers and their political aspirations. You know, what this comes down to now, right, even before immigration, we did not have the resources, the infrastructure or the services to accommodate the mass influx of people that are coming into the country. I mean, we had a housing crisis, we had a housing crisis, a healthcare crisis, a homeless crisis, education, law and order. And this is all before immigration, you know. So everyone knows immigrants didn't cause the housing crisis, which is something Breed Smith and Nick Barry keep banging on about. But a mass influx of people when resources are already at a critical point is clearly going to have a negative or a domino effect on all services.
Yeah, well, that doesn't take a rocket scientist to work that one out, yeah.
Of course, and the government now has gone rogue, along with the media, to push the narrative on racism, to shut people up and to keep them quiet. It's not working anymore, you know, with Twitter, with Elon Musk taking over Twitter now, people are able to voice their opinions, you know. And you can see the government's getting desperate now and trying to
But the problem with Twitter is, you know, as much as I know, you know.
Oh, you do see a lot of misinformation.
Well, there is a lot of misinformation, but apart from that, you know, Twitter's a little, I mean, we think we have power on Twitter sometimes, and we do sometimes because something gets attention in the press because it's seen on Twitter. But in itself, Twitter is a little bit of an echo chamber because what happens is, yeah, you've got it's actually quite a small amount of people, percentage of the population that are actually on Twitter. So it's the same people over and over again. It's the same, maybe in Ireland there's 5 million people. I'm not too sure how many people are on Twitter. Someone will check it out for me. Maybe 50,000 or 100,000. So it's the same people over and over again. You know what I mean? So it is a little bit of an echo chamber of extreme left and extreme right fighting with each other. So that, unfortunately, exactly, it doesn't have a huge amount of power.
No, and then RTE getting 750 million after that scandal last year. It's an absolute disgrace. So we can keep pushing the narrative of far right. I sent you a few clips the other day there, and it's what happened in Dublin, the riot, which was lawless, and no one like condones that, okay? In Germany, a couple of months ago, where that Afghan migrant went on a stabbing spree at an anti-Islam rally, who ended up killing a police officer, far right rally. And even in Britain there the other day, after in Southport, far right agitators. It just seems to be the narrative right across Europe, you know. And one thing I want to say, Ben Scanlon said it perfectly on GB News the other day. He said the government are elected by the people to manage the country. They do not own the country. The people do. And their job is to serve at the will of the people for what is best for its citizens and the country. That's it.
Stay there for a second, Carl. Let me just go to Stephen. Stephen, hi, how are you?
Niall, how are you?
Stephen, you know, we can talk about the far right all you want, and it's easy to label people. But what's going on both in Ireland and the United Kingdom at the moment, leaving aside the scumbag rioters who deserve to go to jail, by the way, anybody who's running around with a knife in their hand or, you know, firing missiles at the police, whatever, deserves to go to jail, right? That's, you know, you can't have public disorder like that. But peaceful protest, the idea that, again, the Red Sea poll is making it very clear how the Irish people feel. And yet Roderick O'Gorman on the radio again this morning and talking to GRIP Media yesterday, more or less said, doesn't care, I don't care, it's happening anyway. We're going to keep doing it. You know what I mean?
Well, to a certain extent, we have to be doing something with all of the people that are coming. You know, we can't up the drawbridge and you know, block everybody at the ports. It just isn't possible.
Stephen, it is possible to do something. Like, there was a video up yesterday by Gavin Pepper, or the day before, right, where he just happened to be beside the iPass Centre when a taxi arrived from Belfast with a load of people in it in their suitcases, straight to the iPass Centre. He went over to the taxi driver and said, "Sorry, sir, can I ask you where you've just come from?" He said, "Belfast Airport."
Mm-hmm.
A load of people, yeah. straight into the iPass Centre.
Presumably on the order of the iPass people,
yeah,
that they'd be brought down.
But those people should be returned to where they came from. They came into Belfast Airport. So they didn't fly in from Nigeria or Pakistan or whatever. They came in from Heathrow or Gatwick or Birmingham Airport.
Yeah, but setting aside that there aren't that many direct flights from a lot of these countries that people are coming from.
But not into Belfast Airport, that's for sure.
And not into Dublin. But at the same point, these people that are coming in, you know, possibly are genuine asylum seekers. And if they are, that's possibly why they were brought down. I don't know. I actually only heard a little bit about the survey. I thought it was something to do with the CSO, but apparently it must be a Red Sea survey.
It's Red Sea, 72%.
Because
72%.
People were saying, but if you drill into those numbers, people are fine with people coming to this country that are going to work and, you know, work in the critical services that we need and all these other kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Some of these people don't have the opportunity to, in inverted commas, legally come here.
But when you see, and John McGurk made a point earlier on, we don't have representation in government in this country that represents the view of, say, me or Carl, who's been on the air a few minutes ago, who wants a fair immigration policy, right?
Nobody in Parliament that you feel aligns with your belief.
No, nobody of any, there's no power. And when you see, for example, even in the European elections, and I mentioned, I use me as an example, I got 8.5% first preference votes. By the time we got into second and third preference votes, I was up to whatever, 13 or 14%, right? So we'll take it 10%. We'll just say 10%. So that's 10% of people who thought I had a fair point to make, right? There were others, of course, who were maybe a little bit more right than I am. They got, 2 or 3% or whatever they got, right? So, but 10% of the people are not represented in the doll. They're just not. And realistically, there are other politicians within Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil and possibly Sinn Féin who agree with me, but they toe the party line.
Mm. Well, there is a whole other problem of it, all right. And I expect fully to see a further fracturing of the Dáil when the next election happens, because that's just the way it's going to be. Because like that, most of people, and I feel much the same in terms of the government parties, they don't represent me. They're not following things that I would like to see happen in the country that I live in, So, but at the same point, Simon Harris doesn't want to move to Farmley. His family are living wherever the hell they were living. I can't remember where.
Yeah, no, that's unacceptable.
But the police force who are tasked with protecting him are saying that this is the thing to do. And he may move. He may not. We'll wait and see.
Okay, but the other thing, Stephen, is that over a third of voters believe in some form of a conspiracy theory, of a great replacement theory. Leave the word conspiracy out of it. In other words, 30% of voters are worried that Irish people are being replaced, our population. You can't ignore that 30%. You can't turn around and say they're all idiots. You know what I mean? That's 30% of the population. That's a third, one in three people. You can't ignore that, but the government are ignoring it.
It's a slightly terrifying statistic, all right, and it does require that, that education and information is passed out to explain who people are, where they're coming from, why we're doing it,
what we're
doing.
But it's factually correct because the CSO only put out figures 2 weeks ago in relation to Ireland's population 2057 based on the current scenario, where it suggests that the Irish people won't have huge representation in their own country. I mean, indigenous
define
Irish. Indigenous Irish, right? Okay.
Right, but define huge.
Well, currently at the moment, as far as Europe is concerned, we're per head of population. We're taking in the most amount of people seeking international protection.
At this moment in time.
Okay, and if you do the maths...
Possibly because a lot of them have to move from Germany and France and Spain and Portugal and Italy because they're not allowed to stay there. Or they feel like they can't stay there because the state won't provide any services.
But do we have a right?
We're starting over in this country.
I asked John earlier on the question. Do you believe we have a right as Irish people to protect our culture, our heritage, our traditions, our identity? Do we have a right to protect that? Or do we have to accept the progressive view that the world is just changing?
It's not a binary situation.
Well, it is.
We've had this conversation. It's not. If it is, then the argument's already lost, and we might as well put on a blue and yellow coat and hang up our green, white, and orange one. Put away our shillelaghs and our fiddles and our Irish dancing and everything else, and just say, fuck it, full Europe now. You know, that's not going to happen. Because the majority of the people hold their Irishness the same way as they hold their faith. And that's just the way it is. It may not be something that they do every day. And I happen to have a green hoodie on, but, you know, I'm not walking up and down the streets waving a flag 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and banging a bar on. You know, like this whole notion, I'd love people who say that in much the same way as they feel like they can't say anything and yet happen to be saying anything and everything that they want to say, that we're losing our Irishness. Define Irishness. What do you feel like is okay. missing?
Okay,
and then more so, what are you going to do to preserve said Irishness?
Carl, are we... let me ask Carl.
France, Gend, and okay. Muslim.
Carl, are we losing our Irishness?
I don't know. But you can see those figures in the Red Sea poll that you were quoting there, Noel, that like we will be nearly less of a minority in our own country.
Well, no, that was in the CSO 2 weeks ago. I think Quip printed those figures from the CSO 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But look, when you come into a country, you go to other people's country, you want to experience their culture, their heritage, you know, learn about their history. That's very important. I think that's what makes a country very original. You know what I mean? That's why we go and, experience that. You know, it's great celebrating other people's cultures, but you do have your own identity. You do have your own, you know, your culture that you want to celebrate. And that's why people, that's why I travel anyway, you know? I think that's what we do have to hold on to that. Look, Michael O'Leary said not so long ago on News Talk that this all was a scam, okay? There's no one in this country that doesn't want to give a helping hand. We are very tolerant and we're very welcoming, but we've been getting fleeced for years now, okay? We can't have people coming in with no identification. They weren't able to get here without any identification on them. Michael O'Leary said it himself. I think he's the right man to kind of give that, to say that, you know what I mean? I mean, he owns airlines. He knows that people ain't getting on his flights without any passports or anything like that. And it is a threat to security. We wouldn't board a plane without going through security ourselves. It's not safe. You know what I mean? We've gone through the crash in this country, the USA, the property tax, the toll bridge, the children's hospital, and let's not forget, all the scandals, the smear scandals and all that as well, none of them have been held to account. And now people are actually standing up for what's happened because they're seeing the demographics of their communities change. And now it's your far right and racist, oh, and have you no compassion? Where's the compassion for the children that are left waiting for scoliosis treatments? Where's the compassion for people on hospital beds that are dying? Where's the compassion for people in their homes that are dying as well and we don't have the services for them? You know, they talk about moral and legal obligations. They have moral and legal obligations to the Irish people first and foremost when they take their oaths when they go into office.
Okay, stay there for a second, and please stay with me, Stephen. Let me go to Morris, too. He's been waiting ages. Morris, hi, how are you?
No, how are you doing? Yeah, I was listening to you earlier on talking to John McGurk, and I was surprised that guy asked you, your friend, when you were debating with him, what do you mean? What do you mean defend Ireland? Jesus, we were nearly conquered. We were nearly taken over by a nation beside us, and we just stood up and said, no, we're Irish, and we're going to stay Irish. And that mentality is part of who we are. We won't be ruled by King or Kaiser. That's in our history.
I explained that I was talking to a lefty mate of mine yesterday, and his argument with me was, well, you know, he mentioned this kind of poll of 30% of people believe that we're being replaced, right? And I was saying, it is a genuine concern, I said, because it's based on statistical facts, right? Forget about the conspiracy theories, the IMF and all that kind of stuff. I said, it's real. And he said, well, sure, what's the problem? And he says, is that not just progression? He says, we don't have a right to hold on to our identity. And I said, well, I think we do. You know,
and we do, of course we do. I don't know where he's coming with that argument. We don't have a right. That's the reason why I'm an Irishman, you're an Irishman, and he is as well. Let me just say, if you want to have the Irish people become second class citizens in their own country, if he doesn't want to live here, get out. Well, you go back with the immigrants. I think everybody should have a look at what Poland they're doing. I watched somebody from Poland the other night on the television. He said, we haven't had one stabbing, we haven't had one shooting, we haven't had one rape, and we haven't had one robbery. And he says, do you know why? Because we're not letting illegal people into our country.
You're talking about Hungary. You're talking about Hungary, not Poland, was it? Hungary.
No, Poland. Poland is under attack from the Belarus border.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching the guards every day, the police up on the border. There's migrants all over the top of Belarus. being allowed to try and get into Poland, and they're holding them off. It's all over YouTube.
I know Viktor Orban said the same thing going back a while ago too. But getting back to Ireland and England currently at the moment, and Ireland and the UK, generally speaking, I mean, we are seeing civil unrest, massive civil unrest. But we're also seeing politicians who seem to be motoring on and don't care about that civil unrest. Well, they care about it from a point of view of controlling it, but they don't seem to care, you know, about themselves and getting re-elected, because clearly it's going to affect the possibilities of getting re-elected. Maybe it will, maybe it won't, I don't know. Mm. So why do you think they don't care or not listening to the people?
They don't care because they've had the run of the country for 5 years solid. Like I said to you before, I described it as a three-headed snake. They stole the election. They're in power. And now I've realised that 15 TDs from Fine Gael have been in power the last 14 years and not standing in the next election. Why? Because they're walking away with big, massive pensions that you and I will walk our arses off to keep them in the comfort that they're living in at the moment. England, Ireland and Europe should hold its head in shame because of what's going on. Since the 7th of October last year, 20,000 children murdered in Gaza, and then we have this spilling out into Europe, and we're all up in arms over it. We're a bunch of hypocrites, because we're standing by and we're watching genocide, and now it's coming on our doors, and we don't know how to handle it, so we react violently.
Mm. I don't agree with reacting violently. I don't agree with what was happening in the UK over the last couple of nights. You know,
it's the only thing they know.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you see 16-year-olds running around in Southend with knives in their hand and, you know, on the streets, you know, fighting each other with machetes and all sorts of carry-on, that's not something we're familiar with.
Do you know what, Niall? Just so you mentioned that now, I'm glad you mentioned it. Southend is where my daughter lives, right?
Yeah.
Now, here's the look. She'd love to come home, right? There's people coming into the country being looked after because it's the EU law. My daughter can't come home. Oh, sorry, you have to live here for a year before you can get a mortgage. And she's probably bringing back €200,000 with her. Do you see what I mean? Do you see the unfairness, the way they treat their own Irish people? It's a disgrace.
Well, I mean, here's another one, Stephen. I'm going to be talking to Brendan on Monday, but him and his wife and two kids have a log cabin out the back garden, Stephen. And because they don't have planning to build it, and they're now they've been turned down for retention at Wicklow, and they're just up the road from Crooksling, by the way, where there's 300 migrants, I think it's 300, literally 100 yards up the road with no planning permission. And yet he's going to be put in jail in October unless he removes it from his own land. Does that make sense?
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, no. And I know that, you know, technically there wasn't planning permission, but the government passed laws to say that they didn't need planning permission to erect a load of tents or put, modular homes or whatever it is. So, you know, not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing. But you're right. I think I might have actually met somebody who is in a similar situation in terms of their planning permission, had built something, and then somebody came along and said, "Oh, I didn't approve that. You have to take that down." So if it can win in the courts, great. If it can't, well, somebody's going to have to take it down.
All this man is trying to do is provide a home for him and his wife and two kids on his own land in Wicklow.
On his own land.
Yeah.
All right. It's madness. I don't get it.
And it's not like it's a big monstrosity. It's a port, like a cabin, a log cabin type house. Mm. Little flat roof, log cabin house.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The basics of...
Yeah, and as I said, 200 yards up the road, you know, there's immigrants with no planning permission because the government, of course, brought in emergency legislation that they didn't have to have planning for that. But yet he does. So he's Irish. He can't build a house in his own front garden or his own garden. Or his own land, should I say. And meanwhile, the government can move in as many people as they want all across the world into buildings right next door to him with no planning. It's all illogical.
It does beggar the question, all right. It does beg a lot of questions. But at the same point, we have to put people somewhere, including Irish people, just as a heads up. And the 14,000 people that always get cited are people that are in emergency accommodation. You know, now there's probably another 14,000 that aren't, that are, you know, couch surfing and sleeping in their cars or whatever, you know, or pitching a tent in the local park. Mm. You know, that's also wrong. But
and as I read out earlier on now, ruling today by the High Court, that it's in breach of the human rights of homeless asylum seekers. That we now
have. I've said to you several times that Ireland is in breach of several Irish human rights pieces of legislation and European and international, like trans global pieces of international legislation around disability, maternity access, you know, social welfare, housing, a lot of other different things.
Yeah, well,
we're very good at creating legislation. We're terrible at fucking implementing it.
We're awful at the way we treat people with disability in this country and opportunity for employment. It's terrible. And when I go to places like the United States and you see people with disabilities working away, you know, be it in Walmart. I seen one guy in an electric wheelchair and his job, it was only a menial job, don't get me wrong. He was collecting the trolleys, but they made the job available for him. Obviously got him this particular type of wheelchair.
And made it as accessible as possible for him.
A particular wheelchair I was talking to him. They made this wheelchair for him that he can connect the trolleys to. So at least he can collect the trolleys. So, I mean, what I'm saying, they made the job. Yeah, they adapted the job for him. We don't do shit like that in this country. Anyway, we just let them sit in their houses all day. But anyway,
companies do supervalue and people like that do, but not at the numbers that we should be doing. Yeah.
But anyway, back to the High Court, what it said about human rights and racial homelessness. This is a lawsuit waiting to happen. So now we're going to see a situation in 20 years' time where migrants who came here are all going to sue the state, like we did for the Magdalen Audrey's, the mother and baby homes and everything else, about the way they were treated when they came to Ireland. And the reason we're doing that is because we've nowhere to put them. So what we need to do is stop letting people in that we cannot accommodate. It's as simple.
I agree. You know, but that requires, an agreement within the government to, in inverted commas, up the drawbridge slightly and, you know, be more discreet with how we screen people for coming into the country.
And hire another 300 or 400 people to process them.
I don't see anyone in, you know, right or left of politics that are actively going to, A, campaign on that and, B, actually follow through on it.
Stay there for a second. Final caller. Let me go to Thomas. Thomas, hi. How are you?
Hello, Neil. How are you, bye?
Good, Thomas. What do you want to say?
I just want to say, Neil, I'm here in Cork here, right, bye? I'm in the heart of Cork City, in the heart of the north side, right? We're in Blackpool, just by the Byhaven pub there, right?
Yeah.
There was 50 apartments went up there. There was 2 Irish people got them.
Okay. That's not good, is it? I don't know. I'm not familiar with the story, but I'm taking your word for it. But it's not good if it's true.
No, it's not good. And then you had the credit union closed down, Neil. There's a load of immigrants in there as well. All illegal, no mind you, Neil.
Yeah, well, we don't know if they're all illegal. But they're living in the credit union building.
They're in the credit union building, yeah. No planning permission just put in there, you know.
Yeah. It's not the ideal situation, is it?
No, it's not the ideal situation, Neil. But you know what's happening now, Neil, in this city? There is kind of nobody standing up, you know, Neil. Then you have there in Shandon Street there, you have Thomas School out of Sinn Féin down in Shandon Street. You try getting an appointment for them, you won't get an appointment, Neil, if you're Irish. And that's a fucking fact. Sorry for the language, Neil. That's a fact, Neil. But what is happening in this country is getting rightly out of hand. They're after bringing people out of their shells. Like, I have grandchildren there now, right? And you know what I mean? I've been in trouble with the law. Don't get me wrong, right? I need to stay in from there down that pool ass because this is not acceptable at all to the Irish people. So they're only your friends, they're all criminals. Because I was in trouble years ago, Neil. Like, how can people, you know what I mean? So that's why crime then not getting involved because my people will be put up by all that the criminals are doing this and the criminals doing that. But Neil is getting rightly out of hand down in Cork. And they tell you something else, Neil. Do you know when your Dáil card run out?
Yeah.
I had to go to the social welfare office to get the Dáil card. 3 hours I was waiting because there was people inside in the Cork social welfare office getting PPS numbers, no problem. Walked the North Main Street this morning. There's a mobile phone shop down there. It's whatever you know yourself. Buy new phones, and I just said I followed these people, but I don't know how to use a smartphone, Neil, right? Where do they go? Social welfare. Where do they go then? Off to the South Mall, onto the bus.
I saw the picture yesterday in the paper of the queue outside the social welfare office from people, you know, I'm assuming seeking international protection because that's what it kind of looked like. Anyway, Thomas, I'm sorry I'm going to have to cut you short. I'm running out of time. Stephen, I do apologise as well. If you have anything else to say, Stephen, just on a final note, anything else to say in relation to the original question as to why the government are not listening? But I mean, I don't think none of us will have an answer for that.
I feel like the government, I would say the government probably is listening, but wouldn't know what to do if they had a notion to do anything.
Okay, it's a good point. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Thomas. Thank you to everybody involved in the show today and obviously John McGurk as well, because they're bought and they hate us, says Keelan. It is simple and straightforward as that. Mike Savage says, why? Because they think they're the rulers, not the representatives. Mm-hmm. It's a good point, isn't it? Power's gone to their head, in other words. James says, also touch on the selective outrage and two-tier policy policing riots in Leeds received no police response and no media criticism. Yeah, because the riots in Leeds obviously were for a separate reason. It was the opposite side, if you know what I mean. But it didn't get as much coverage, is the point that he's making. The Big Flu says they are, and the more they do it, oh, in relation to why they're ignoring us, they are, the more they do it, the more people push back. The governments are there to work for the people of the countries, not to look after the third world and illegals from all over the place. They are meant to make our lives better, but they're making a living hell. I'm going to just hold that up again, just so you read that headline in the paper there today, the hype of the High Court. That's going to come back to bite us, you know. And all these immigrants are going to sue us in about 20 years' time. They will sue us for not treating them properly. God bless them. You know, because we wouldn't give them a three-bedroom house. Because it's not what Roderick promised them, by the way, in those tweets. He promised them their own door accommodation within, what, 6 weeks or something silly like that? I can't remember what it was. That's what he promised them in those tweets, didn't he? Going back a couple of years ago when him and Helen McEntee put out those tweets to half the world in different languages. Come to Ireland! We don't care who you are. We'll give you your own door accommodation. That was what the white paper about direct provision said. That instead of putting people in direct provision, we were going to offer them a house. Their own door accommodation. We couldn't even give that to Irish people. At that time, that tweet went out. There was 10,000 Irish people in temporary accommodation homeless. I don't see the Irish people, by the way, having a High Court case because they're not being given somewhere to live. It's disgraceful what's happening in this country. You have a bunch of politicians who really and truly don't care what you think anymore. They've stopped caring. It's clear. It's clear as the nose on your face. It's clear by the Red Sea poll that was out yesterday. I have it here. 72% of respondents believed that the government had lost control of immigration. Almost a third of voters believe in a number of different conspiracy theories in relation to the Great Replacement Theory. They have to load us in the media because that particular piece was actually written somewhere else, not the Grip. A conspiracy. It's not a fucking conspiracy. It's true that the population is changing. And according to the CSO's own figures, by 2057, you know, the population will increase to 7.5 million people based on the current scenario. So it's not a conspiracy theory. The reasons for it might be some sort of conspiracy, but it is going to happen. It's factually correct if we continue down the road we're going down. When we see the Electoral Commission found also 30% of voters believe that a small secret group of people is responsible, a man behind the curtain. I don't believe there's a man behind the curtain. A fifth of voters, 22%, told the survey they believe the establishment is replacing white people. I don't think we should get into skin colour. That's according to the survey by the Red Sea poll, by the way. 51% of people believe that NGOs have way too much influence. And a vast percentage of the population believe the government are not listening to them anymore. The majority of people, I think, believe the government are not listening to them anymore. They need to start listening to the people. It's going to get worse. Look what's happening in the UK at the moment. Nobody wants civil unrest. Nobody wants civil disobedience. It seems apart from the government. Because as much as they give out about the far right and the people who are protesting on the streets, they're creating the problem. They're causing what happened in Coolock. They're causing what happened in Newtown and Kennedy. And what's probably going to happen in Dundrum and Tipperary. Because they're not listening to the people. We need to stop. The idea that a family and a group of people, they didn't even look like a family, it looked like a group of people, primarily men, jumped out of a taxi straight from Belfast Airport, which happened to be captured by Councillor Gavin Pepper, just at that particular moment in time. And the driver of the cab admitted he just came from Belfast Airport. When they arrive in the IPAS centre, it's clear they're not asylum seekers or genuine asylum seekers. I'll tell you why. People say, how do you know that, Niall? Because they wouldn't be coming from Belfast Airport. If they came from Pakistan or India or Nigeria, there are no flights into Belfast Airport, as far as I know. You would have to get a connection from Heathrow or from Birmingham or from Manchester or Stansted or wherever it is. So they came from the UK. So the UK was their first port of call. That's where they claim asylum, not in Ireland. They should have been taken straight from the IPAS centre, put back on a minibus and delivered back to Belfast Airport to the authorities. And the authorities in Belfast Airport, we should be communicating with Northern Ireland, should be going, OK, send them back to where they came from. Where did they come from? France? They come from Germany? They come from England? Find out where they came from. They have to have identification, some description. We'll know from the flight logs where they came from. Send them back. I watched that program yesterday, you know, the Australian one. Nothing to declare. They take no shit from anybody. If you're not there for a legitimate reason or you're not a legitimate asylum seeker, you're going back to where you came from within 24 hours. You're processed like that. That's what we need to do. We need to get off our arses and do this properly. But the only way it's going to happen is if we get rid of Rodrigo Gorman, we get rid of Helen McEntee, and we get rid of Simon Harris. That's the only way it's going to happen. Democratically get rid of them out of power. That's the only way it's going to happen. Because they are not going to change. Do you think Sinn Féin are change? You're wasting your time. They're not change either. I don't really know what the solution is for everybody. Independence, can they work together? It's hard to know, really, isn't it? Paul Murphy and his group, that's the last thing you want. They'll make things 10 times worse. The socialist parties, forget about them. What you need is a group of independents who all think the same way. But the problem is they don't. There are some that are extremists. Kick them all out. Fuck them all. You don't want those in power either. But you want people who have a fair immigration policy that will say people should be welcome to come to Ireland to work and we should be encouraging more people to come here to work and add to our economy. But those who are genuine asylum seekers, yes, we should be trying to help them, which is a very small number of people, by the way. But the majority who come here through that process are economic migrants and they should be deported. Simple as that. And that's, we go back to where we were 10 years ago. That's what we should be doing. But we're not going to do that. And you know why? Because you're all sitting on your arses and doing nothing about it. It's not my fault. I ran for election. I have a podcast. I'm drawing attention to it. I'm doing this podcast every day, giving you an opportunity. Unlike Joe Duffy and RTE who get their 725 million, I'm giving you an opportunity for free because most of you aren't even paying for it. And I say that again angrily because we do this. There's three of us do this every day. We don't get bleeding paid for it. But I do it because I care. I do it because I believe these issues are really important. That's the reason I do it. But we need to pay the bills. And you don't help us. Thank you to those of you who do. There are a small number of people who subscribe to our website. And a small number of people who donate every now and again when they can. And I really appreciate it. We really do. But most of you listening right now, 3,000 maybe on Twitter, 4,000 up to 22,000 Monday, 4,000 or 5,000 on Facebook, another few thousand on YouTube or whatever it is, and then the thousands who'll download it later on from Spotify and iTunes. You're not paying at all. You're listening to it for free. And that's great, by the way. We want to give it to you. We want you to be able to hear it. Otherwise, there's no point in having it. But it would be nice if you put your hand in your pocket every now and again just to help us pay the bills. Even a fiver. You know, the price of a cup of coffee or something. You're happy to give RTE 160 quid of your money every year. You give Sky Television, I don't know, 100 quid of your money every month. You give Netflix, whatever it is, 20 quid a month. You know, we're giving you an opportunity to actually make a difference. Something that's important, an opportunity to have an opinion. You don't even give us a euro, most of you. You listen to it right now, for free. If you can help us, please go to the website, nileboylan.com. You can donate there, just a fiver, whatever. Or you can subscribe. Because I can tell you now, if we don't start getting enough money to pay the bills, and I don't mean making money, I have my own job. As you know, I work in radio. The other two have their jobs too. We're willing to make that sacrifice. We don't care if we personally don't make any money. But if we don't get enough to pay the bills, and it is expensive to do this every day, it'll have to go. If you don't pay, you don't get change. You don't get a voice. It'll go. Because we couldn't continue to do this and pay for it all the time. So please help us to do that. The bills came in yesterday, and I can tell you now, I had to speak to the other two about how much money have you got? Spare. So we can pay the bills because we don't have enough money in subscriptions and the odd donation we get. That's what the conversation we had to have. And that's the conversation we have to have every month. Because unfortunately, people don't want to pay. And I understand everybody has their own financial difficulties and problems. I get that. But we're not asking you for much. It's a fiver or something. Anything, whatever you can afford. You know, if you can pay for it once a month, great. If you can't, just one-off donation on the website, great. If you're, by the way, part of a big company or you're somebody who's quite wealthy and you want to support us, you can pay with donate what you want. pay the bills next month. Go to the website now, nileboylan.com, if you can do that. We should be back again with you on Monday. There's a lot to talk about, including that male boxer, that lad. The fight was ended, by the way. The female boxer in the Olympics went into tears because the Olympics, of course, let men, biological men, fight against women. That's a topic I'm sure is going to be coming up over the weekend. Keep an eye on my Twitter account and go to our website, nileboylan.com. Please donate. Please subscribe. We shall talk to you again on Monday at 12 o'clock. Until then, have a great day.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.